Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
If you're constantly on the hunt for a good deal, then you need Rakuten. Rakuten is the smartest way to save money when you shop because members get cash back at over 3,500 stores across every category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, traveling, dining, and more. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while you're doing it? It's a no-brainer. Get the Rakuten app now and join the 17 million members who are already saving. Cashback rates change daily. See Rakuten.com for details. That's Rakuten. Your cashback really adds up.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 687. Here's the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Philip Stamper runs a weekly updated list of upcoming independent wrestling events at facebook.com/deskofnatestein, S-T-E-I-N. It includes international organizations like Ring of Honor and Combat Zone Wrestling to smaller organizations in each state and country around the world. Well done, Philip Stamper. It's also a good wrestler name. Ken Edwards is a filmmaker and a podcaster and made a movie about open mics. It's 27 minutes long. It's called The Joke. And you can find it on YouTube by searching The Joke Ken Edwards with two N's. And Matt Bronger talks about what he's up to lately on his new album release on Nerdist Podcast Network's own Ding Donger with Matt Bronger. Find it on Nerdist.com and iTunes. Bronger's wonderful. Love him on At Midnight. Love him as a comic. Great podcast. Good dude. If you want to have your stuff submitted to the Nerdist Community Corkboard, then by all means, send us an email at events@nerdist.com. This episode is Shane West, and he is promoting Salem, which is a show that I watch Sundays, 10 p.m. on WGN. It's a witch war, people. And so Shane's on, and I believe Janet Montgomery, who plays Mary Sibley, is also going to be on the podcast coming up. But Shane West, super interesting guy, because he's not just an actor. He's not just an actor that's been in Nikita and on Salem and in a bunch of Anna Walk to Remember and a bunch of other stuff. Also was in a punk band for a long time. So musician, actor, good dude, nice guy, really nice guy. Someone that attractive shouldn't be as nice as he is. He's very chiseled, and I was a little intimidated, but he totally put me at ease. Very, very, very sweet guy. And so watch Salem, also enjoy his music, and listen to this episode. And now, here is episode number 687 with Shane West. Katie, roll the thing, please.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Do you have adequate and acceptable slack?
I do now. I just hate leaning back and then I move the whole thing.
Please just knock everything. You know, fuck this. This is dumb. These water bottles are stupid.
Slightly deformed.
It is slightly deformed. There's a little bit of an Audi.
That's why. There's a little bit of an Audi.
But you know what? God loves it just the same.
What? He loves these water bottles?
Yeah. No, he loves the all new
A3. Oh,
it's an Audi, guys.
Yeah. No, that's good. Put your phone in.
Starting at $29.99.
Nice association there, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's what I do here. Just associate.
Shane West, I don't know if you'll remember this. I feel like one year at Comic-Con.
You guys fucked? That's cool.
Yeah, and you have a son.
A lot of alcohol.
That's why I don't know if I remember that.
And I have a son.
Here he is.
I think I would remember that one. I think I remember the son part.
Here he is.
I got Jack's disease.
I was going to say, how did he get the height?
We're calling it Jack's disease.
But all right, Jack's disease, too.
Yeah, we made love in a pile of toxic waste.
Right.
And
here. So sweet.
Yeah. Anyway, there's not really a podcast.
Toxic
I just want to give you your kids so you can go home. I'm tired of raising him.
Papa, that's your other kid.
I feel like I was at a party at Comic-Con, and I did the thing that people do to me, and I felt so stupid that I'm like, why did I just do that? I said hello to you as if we knew each other, but it's just because I knew who you were. But in my brain, it was like, oh, I know. We know. But then I was like, afterwards, and you were like, hi. Because I feel like I was so familiar. Like,
did I literally say, hi?
Well, no, it wasn't like that. I was just more like, hey, man, how you doing? And you were like, oh, hi. I mean, like, you were nice about it, but it was clear that I think you were trying to work out, why do I know?
Tony, your dads are weird.
Well, because I could have been doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've potentially met you or known you for many years, so it could have been having the exact same moment you were having of like, crap, I didn't know that I knew him.
Yeah, that's so weird. It's so weird.
Kind of thing. I don't know.
But it was funny that I walked around, I was like, oh man, I just did that thing. It's just because I've seen him on him things. I've just seen him on stuff.
Pulled the move.
We don't actually know each other.
Yeah, I guess not.
But my girlfriend and I are fans of Salem and watched, I'm behind on season two just because of travel, but season one,
right.
we banged out in a couple of days, like, yeah. It was one of those, like,
bang, no, now I,
you're making it sound
out.
No, banging out, like, we just watched the show with our
yeah, no, that's what I thought you meant.
Your son,
he's
is special,
still yeah, he is very special.
That's what I thought you meant.
Tell.
He's a special boy,
aren't you a special boy?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
are you pooping right now?
No, I'm just growing so fast, it hurts.
So what would that make his
a
age be?
Gift.
He's two and
is
a half.
Two and a half? Yeah. Okay.
It's a shitty gift.
Two and three quarters.
I want a greeting card that says that.
My hair hurts.
I think I have an eye in my armpit. I don't know what's happening. All the molecules are forming too fast. Oh, thank you.
But we're fans of Salem, and I am I to understand that in season two of Salem that you get to have your actual hair on the show and not the John Alden hair?
Yes, I do.
That's good. That's
it goes
good.
Through a pretty incredible transformation in the beginning of season. I still have the hair in episode one of
right.
season two, and then it gets shorn. So I don't know. It was a very, to me, when we started this show, we knew obviously it was kind of a fantastical take on this period of time in American history, having the witches be real and things like that. But at this, and we enjoyed that, but at the same time, we were trying to make it as realistic as possible.
Sure.
Especially in the first season. When we got to the end of the season and so many things were thrown off, like bathtubs, there were no bathtubs back then. You were standing up in a bathtub. You weren't lounging, and they had these beautiful ornate bathtubs, and we're like, all right, I think we're kind of just not giving up, but we're making this really just gonna look cool at this point.
Right.
So we're not gonna do that. All right. So then I was like, well, I'm the only one with the hair. Like, everybody else is usually, like, all the other guys had short hairdos, and back then no one really had a short hairdo. So finally, at the end, with all the problems that wig gave me mentally, physically, and emotionally, we moved on the second season.
And, you fired the wig.
Yes, we fired the wig. Yes.
It is, I mean, one of the things about that show that is, that watching it and going, the costumes are so intricate that everything, and you're just traipsing around in the mud all day. It's just like in these.
Destroying those costumes?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and Joseph, our costume designer, who's phenomenal, he's getting half this stuff from China. He just spends his summers in China and brings back all this amazing silk and fabric and puts this stuff together. Now, for me, I'm not wearing anything I'm wearing stuff that he deems appropriate and what might look cool, but
right.
It's not, I don't think any of my stuff is very expensive or anything like that, but it's, yeah, we're sweating in it. We shoot in Shreveport, Louisiana. It's incredibly humid. And then it's incredibly cold in the winter. So we're sweating in it. We're attacked by mosquitoes, the weather. We're destroying his, you know, art piece.
You are from Louisiana, is that correct?
I am originally.
You're
yeah.
from Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge, that's right. But we're not, I mean, it's still a 4-hour drive from Shreveport. It's a 5-hour drive to New Orleans. So it was close to being home. My dad's there. My family's there. My little sister's there. But it was still I didn't want to go home every weekend.
Of course.
I still would like to potentially sit on the couch and watch TV and relax. Yeah.
Is Shreveport? I haven't been to Shreveport. What is there? There must be a couple of at least local haunts that the whole Salem cast descends upon.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's about it. A couple. Like, that's all we got. It's a small town. It's not Shreveport. The people are amazing.
Yeah.
And it's fun for me to be a part. Like, it was always kind of a joke in my career that I've been doing this for about 15 years now that I would never film in Louisiana. Somehow it was just never going to work out. And so when I finally got it, it's exciting to be there. It's exciting to be close to home, so to speak. But In Shreveport, there isn't a whole hell of a lot to do, unless you like gambling. There's plenty of casinos. They have a crazy law, maybe because of the gambling on the river, on the riverfront, that you can drink in bars on Fridays and Saturdays until 6 o'clock in the morning. You could still smoke cigarettes inside the bars.
Sure.
It's a town that kind of hasn't
Let's go.
Because of that?
Yeah. Smoke cigarettes, bars open until six, gambling everywhere?
Trust me, it gets old quick. But
it would never get old for me.
It'd be a fun weekend.
It becomes Reno
one
real
weekend.
Fast.
Yes, exactly. Then it goes that route. I've dealt with Reno, yeah. But the food's is pretty good, and the people are great. We have our little Superior Steakhouse, which is the steakhouse that we always go to. And then we had our bar, The Stray Cat, which was kind of a local haunt that all of the cast and the producers went to.
A lot of production is down in Shreveport, though, right? Don't a lot of movies, like there's a, it's a high amount.
It gets some high traffic, but it's pushing more south now, and it's getting down towards like Magnificent Seven. The remake of that film is going to be in Baton Rouge, and the Pitch Perfect movies have been in Baton Rouge and New Orleans. The new series that WGN's also doing on the Underground Railroad called Underground is also shooting in Baton Rouge. So Shreveport's been losing some stuff lately. We're kind of the only ones right now keeping them going in the entertainment industry. But I'm sure they'll get something else soon.
Yeah, because Louisiana in general has like the best tax breaks in the country, right?
They're supposed to, but it changes all the time. Yeah. Texas wrestles with them all the time. There's random things shooting in like Mississippi that didn't really have an entertainment industry as much. Atlanta's taking things over.
Yeah.
I mean, Atlanta's got a lot of series going on.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
Yes, it's – well, because Atlanta has all of the Turner stuff. Like most of the Turner stuff there, and obviously not all, but they have most. Yeah. They have most of the Turner stuff there, and then you know, because Atlanta is enough of a like it's just enough of a city that people are like, oh, I could go, you know, I could live in Atlanta for a while. Mm-hmm. But now it's getting to the point where people are getting priced out. Like it's starting to get really? Very expensive to live in Atlanta.
Yeah, and everyone, like little 5 points. I was there recently, and people were saying like, yeah, same thing's happening. Like these condos are coming up, just like any like, hip area and any like outside of any city. The same thing's happening just because people are moving there because it's like there's so many digital jobs coming up outside of Turner. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, Adult Swim and TBS, everyone like, so there's tons of people moving there.
Yeah. And you have if you're, I know some people here in Los Angeles that aren't exactly working out here that are like, you know, fuck it. I'm going to Atlanta.
I think it's rare.
I've had a couple friends move to Atlanta in the past year.
I think it's rare when you meet an actor and you find out, oh, you're shooting here? Like, people, you shoot every, I feel like most people shoot, unless you're like on a sitcom, you shoot everywhere else but Los Angeles.
When there's a show, especially a series that is films, that's not a, you know, an hour drama that films in LA now, it's a miracle. It just doesn't, it's like when you were, and you have to think about it because it changes your life. If you're married and you have kids, obviously that's something you have to think about. And you, all of a sudden, you say you're in your pilot season, whatever that may be nowadays, and you look at three new shows. Most likely, it's not going to be in Los Angeles. So you have to think, can I go for 13 episodes somewhere else? Can I Walking Dead in Atlanta? Can I go do that? Can I do 24 episodes in Vancouver? Can I, you know, and that kind of – and it's incredible what you have to think about nowadays.
Yeah, because Walking Dead, especially –
Fear the Walking Dead is in
Toronto, right? What?
Fear the Walking Dead is in Toronto.
Fierce, are they shooting in Toronto?
Is that
it's set in LA.
Yeah, set in LA, shooting in Toronto.
They're going to shoot in Toronto.
Yeah.
Well,
Nikita, my last series was 22 episodes in Toronto for 4 years.
Oh, gosh. So, that's cold. It gets cold up there.
It is very cold. Yeah. But, you know,
it's cool through the entire winter.
Yeah. Toronto's a nice city, though.
It's a great city.
Toronto's a good city. Yeah. Where they shoot Walking Dead is. It's rural. It's like it's not in
it's
Atlanta.
It's got to be
proper.
Outside of Atlanta.
It's
Macon?
Way outskirts.
I'm familiar with all areas of Toronto, thanks to Love It or List It on HGTV.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Tune in, folks. She knows.
Okay.
Listen, we've been over this. I watch a lot of HGTV.
I got lost on that.
Well, okay. So basically a couple comes in and they...
They're not a couple. They just act like it. They know
they
each other
like,
so well.
Like a couple of people.
Right.
So let's say you have a house, Shane. Okay. You have a house.
Right.
And so two people will come in. One of those people will try to convince you to remodel your existing home for a certain amount of money. Okay. The other person is a real estate agent, and he will try to convince you.
Don't waste your money.
Don't list it. Let's, for this amount of money, you could go live in this whole other new thing, which would require no work or this much work or suit your needs.
And they usually love it.
Yeah.
They rarely list it because they get a fucking full remodel. And then
That makes sense.
Well, I'm going to stay.
Do you own? Do you
I'm
own a house?
I'm actually in the process of selling my house right now.
You are.
So I should be watching this show. I should have just stuck around. Maybe I should have loved it.
You're listing it.
I'm listing it. Yeah, your listed it, and it's currently, you know, in escrow. So
oh, good.
Just go well.
Is it in you're selling your house
in Los
LA?
Angeles. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's been 9 years, and that's enough. I'm 36, so that was through most of my young adult life, and I had a lot of fun there, and it was good times, and I loved the place, but it was a lot of work, more work than I expected, a lot of stairs, just constant things going wrong, which I know is a part of being a homeowner. But in this particular case, it just wasn't for me anymore at this point. I needed something smaller. I haven't even begun to look. So I just got back from filming Salem, and I'm been here for 2 days. So I've decided to stay in a hotel for a month. Which is a waste of money, but a lot of fun.
It is kind of fun.
Colossal waste of money.
It is, but you know, if you're able to do it, it's fun to do it once in a while just to not have to worry about any of it.
That's incredibly nice. And I've sworn to do the month and not to go, well, maybe July, maybe August. And then
it's
get
so
a call
easy.
From, yeah.
Well,
from
the air conditioning always works here.
Yeah, that's right. God. The towels are changed every
all
morning.
All the sheets. Someone just makes the bed.
All the time.
I come in and it's all...
Yeah, no, it's I'm going to spend this month also trying to look for a new place, but I haven't found one yet.
You're
going to
stay in L.A.?
I do. I want to stay on the east side. Yeah. I like the east side a lot.
The best, yeah. My house is on the east side of town, too, and you do have to get used to living in a house. I was so used to being around other people, like being in an apartment building or being in a lot of hotels from
right.
Being now, on if the you road. Hear a noise, it's probably a ghost.
It's probably a ghost.
Or someone breaking in.
Or that's someone breaking right. in to turn me into a ghost. Yeah, I mean, right. I really do. I mean, home invasion is just one of those things that you just
well, that's
can't.
How I found the homeless lady outside my house. I was like laying in bed. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. Dory was out of town and I heard someone cough and I was laying in my bedroom and I was like,
that
I just thought to myself, I thought, oh, it must be the neighbor upstairs. And I was like, oh, I don't live in an apartment anymore.
That could have been. That's one of the more frightening things I think I could ever hear. A cough,
yeah.
In the middle of the night.
It was
night.
A cough, and then I was like, "Oh, that's probably." And yeah. Then I went to the window and I looked out there and I saw her, and then I just grabbed my giant Surefire flashlight and went outside and just flashed right in her eyes, and she was charging her cell phone.
That's so weird.
I was like,
"Did you let her finish charging it?"
No. I was like,
how was
go,
she charging
go.
Her cell phone?
To one of the outdoor outlets.
To an outdoor outlet.
Yeah. Okay. She was plugging it in one of the outdoor outlets.
That's why I suggest if you like live in a house that you might be kind of creeped out by, just get a cat because you can just use a cat as any. It was like, da-doom. It's the cat.
What if someone's breaking into your house?
The
and
window
the cat
slamming.
Do anything?
Yeah. Well, no, it's the cat breaking into the house.
I think the cat's breaking into the house. Yeah,
yeah. The cat's watching the cat break into the house.
Human form and is killing
you. People hate cats.
No, I set up. There's cameras like all around.
Yeah, that's what I have now after that
my house
incident.
Now,
that six cameras. Yep,
I have fake cameras all up around the house.
Just to,
like, yeah, like
oh,
the guy.
No,
who,
Jonah,
like,
don't say it on this.
Oh no, that's where I live.
The address is.
When the guy was flipping the house that we bought, like he put a bunch of like cameras because there was like no fence yet. So he's like, I had to put up cameras, and once I put up cameras, stuff got getting stolen. Like people just saw it and walked away.
Oh wow! They didn't just knock the cameras down and steal the cameras?
No, they didn't get close to the cameras.
Hey, wait a minute! Yeah. These aren't attached to anything. Break out of the house.
There's no wires, but in this day and age.
Yeah,
don't need wires.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's it is a little bit of an adjustment to, you know, like live in a grown up house when hotels are perfectly comfortable places.
Absolutely. No space. Not a lot of space. But
no,
yeah, but having
you know,
that space in a house is just yeah.
I mean, but in a house, you only really go to a couple of places in your. It's like you don't really utilize all of the space in your house.
You don't because it's. Four floors.
All right. Well, don't, come on.
Well, it was a similar thing that it's absolutely true. Like I noticed that if I purposely did not put a fridge in my bedroom because I never would have left. It was a weird floor where I had my own exit from the house into my bedroom and an entrance into the kitchen. So I was like, I'm not putting a fridge here. I will not see the house.
Yeah.
Everything else is here.
You have to force yourself to at least leave a breadcrumb trail.
Yeah.
Right. I have to go to this bathroom to brush my teeth.
Right, right.
But you, I want to talk about your music career because it's funny to it's pretty amazing when you go down one path and it's like, oh, this other path reveals itself, and then you start having a very successful acting career, and then you it's almost a which one do you choose?
Yeah, that well, I guess when I started anything for in the entertainment industry, I was around 17, and my parents were in bands when I was growing up in Louisiana, and they were in so I was born in 78, so that was the whole, well, I guess the birth of punk rock and also the end of it, and the birth of new wave and all that kind of stuff. So my mom was like in an all new wave band, all girl new wave band, and my dad was like in a Clash type band. So it was like a lot of the music that I was listening to.
I'm sorry, what were they called? What were the bands called? Do you know?
Okay, so my mom's band was called The Parallels.
No, oh, that's a good name. Cool.
I always kind of wish someone would take it. I think they still might. Well, now they will. But sorry, Mom. But then my dad was in the U.S. Times.
Nice.
So, they were a lot of fun. They still are. When I listen to their stuff now, I'm kind of in now. So for me, that's what I thought I'd do. The acting, my mom moved us out to Los Angeles, became a thing where I thought I'd give it a try because I was running into a lot of people that were doing it, and I was a huge movie buff and just a big fan of movie and television anyway. But I literally lived in a garage, and I had a garage band, and started auditioning at the same time. And the acting thing kind of took off a little bit quicker. And the music, I mean, that could never happen. I guess acting could never happen either, but the music was, you know, playing a lot of places like the Gig on Melrose, which exist anymore, and the Gig off of Pico, which doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, that place
called
sucked.
The Joint. Yeah, remember that?
I fucking played that place once. Did you really? Yeah, real shit.
We played that a lot. Yeah, yeah. And it was not fun.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was exciting just to play, but yeah.
Nah, not with this.
No. Yeah, like, the place just sucked.
It was like my last grab at just like, it's like I couldn't get like any of my own bands going when I moved out here. And then some guy was like, you can be in my band. I was like, sure.
Yeah.
And I talked about before, Science and the Lab Rats. And I was just like, awesome, I was like, I like the guy was like, he basically just sounded like the Ramones or like Screeching Weasel or the Queers or something like that. But like, I was like, do you know those bands? He's like, never heard of them. I was like, oh, you're just a weirdo.
Then we're in trouble.
Yeah. Right. Like fucking like, you know,
Jonah's a drummer. So he's a little tied to.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And like, it's just,
well, I love Screeching Weasel. Yeah.
Yeah. They were like one of my favorite bands. Yeah. And it's like, it was just one of those things where it's like, the songs were catchy and I was like, I'll play. And it was just, we played there and it sucked. I got a bottle thrown at me. Well, it was thrown at him, I believe, but he dodged it.
You choose to believe.
Yeah, the drummer.
Yeah. Moved slightly.
Yeah. And then we played the garage.
I played the garage.
Yeah. And I was so sick, and I was like, I can't play. Holy. I got food poisoning or something. I don't feel good. And he's like, you got to be dedicated to the science.
Named their own band. You got to be dedicated to. And that's like, always trouble.
And so, like, it was like the grossest thing where it's like we're playing, and it was like one of those things where it's like about to be the end of a song where it's like a big, you know, floor tom snare hit.
Okay.
And I threw up right as I was coming down. And so as I hit the drums, it was like an 80s music video where it all just splashed right back up in a mist all
Kid,
over
the crowd
me.
Went bananas.
Yeah.
You gotta do that every night.
Right.
Yeah, and then it's your
classic.
Thing.
Yeah.
If anyone was watching, it would have gotten a response.
That's when they changed the name to The Science of Vomit, and every show Jonah had to throw up.
Yeah. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, that was, I was just like,
no,
I was like,
no video, of course.
No video.
No, not even a Polaroid.
No, I would have like fucking burned it.
God damn.
Yeah.
With the band, I mean, I started off literally as a three piece. It was more of like I was really into Rancid. I was really into Green Day.
Yeah.
That was
Hall of Famers
back,
Green Day.
I guess so.
Yeah.
What a transition that band went from. But those were the kind of bands that I was, you know, playing with, a Swedish pop punk band called Millencolin that I really loved.
I remember Millencolin. Like,
I love those guys. And thanks to later on in life, when I started playing with the Germs, I got to actually meet those guys, Millencolin.
Oh, no
which
way.
Was a trip for me, and of course, they didn't know who Millencolin was, but for me, it was, you know, it was kind of a weird dream come true.
Yeah.
But yeah, it became a thing where we had a lot of fun. We got, we were first called Average Joe, and then we changed it to, when we realized I can't be, that couldn't be copywritten. We changed it to Johnny Was for a while and played some decent shows and never got signed, but we tried for a while. And then, yeah, we hit that moment of where the acting was clearly doing better at the time. And what I sometimes sacrificed doing some jobs and things like that to go on tour with my band Johnny Was, and I had to kind of try and balance it out, and that's tough. You know, I feel like
not everybody can have a dog star, you know.
Right.
Or yes, pee. Yes.
Was it. I think, well, I think, that's the thing, is there was such a name already, or even Jared Leto, like he had put himself out there. So it's like people knew who he was when he decided to completely stop for a while, and then of course comes back and wins an Oscar. But you know, like, you know, it's a difficult thing to do at the same time. I don't think we can count Bruce Willis and Russell Crowe's band.
The Return of Bruno.
Right.
That was his record.
I think it's funny to sit down with your band and be like, guys, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to grow up and take this acting job. Like, it's almost like that your adult job is like, well, I gotta go be a performer.
Yeah, I can't talk about love lost and crying on the toilet and like Blink-182 songs all the time. It was. But actually, what transitioned it fully was I had started working on ER, and then I booked the film called What We Do Is Secret, which was about the Germs, and it took 3 years to make that damn film. And we kept losing finances, kept coming back, but we learned all the actors learned the songs. We were taught by the actual Germs, Pat Smear and Don Bowles and Lorna Doom. And it became kind of like a family. Over the 3 years of my hiatuses in between ER, I would go and work on this damn film that became truly a labor of love. That when I started kind of joining the band in a way, and then playing these small shows with the actual band and me being the lead singer who taking over for Darby Crash, who was such an iconic figure, I realized I can't do the music I was doing before anyway, because now I'm like realizing, oh, this is more punk rock, which I didn't expect to necessarily do. It's much, much easier to sing or to scream. Like, I didn't want to play drums and that impossibly fast, or a guitar, which just shredding. I just couldn't do that. And it was, we weren't trying to sell records. We weren't trying to get signed, because the Germs had already been signed a little bit back in the day. Yeah. So it was like, wow, I'm close to 30. This is what I should be doing if I'm going to be doing this.
Right.
So they understood, and they even saw the transition happening. They were coming to some of the shows and they were like, this is not the same when we play. Like, it's not people trying to kill you, actually, on stage. This is crazy. But I get that you're having the time of your life, and this is what you want to do. And so that was at least my musical transition from one, I guess, subgenre to a little bit more of a real punk rock.
Do you feel like, well, music's not going anywhere. I mean, at any point, you could go back if you if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Or do you ever, when you're on location, you're like, I'm just gonna go play at this bar?
I'd love to. I get that feeling anytime I go to a show. You start to get the urge to be on stage again. I think with one of the coolest things that happened with the Germs coming back together is Pat Smear reunited with Dave Grohl during that time and was asked back in the Foo Fighters. So it really changed it changed everyone's lives, but Pat's life went kind of full circle in a weird way. And rejoined on that. Then I went off to shoot Nikita for 4 years in Toronto. Pat was a part of the Foo Fighters again. So we haven't really played in 5 years. We played one secret show recently at the Echoplex around last Christmas for a benefit, and we couldn't find Lorna Doom. We couldn't find her. Like, we lost, which is typical. I'm sure she's fine, but it was just typical in this punk rock world, and just couldn't find the thing. So we had Charlotte from the Go-Go's play.
Nice.
And to replace her, which was the first Germ show that was, it was actually, we called it Germs a Go-Go, which was from their first album, Whiskey a Go-Go. So it kind of worked out in a weird way. But, you know, I think we'll play again, but it's got to be one last time, I think.
Right.
I'm talking to friends about potentially putting something together, but once again, it's going to go with that same ethic. It doesn't need to sound like the Germs, or it doesn't need to sound like Black Flag or anything like that. But I want it to be the ethic of, we're not going to sell, we're going to play what we want to play.
Right.
We're not going to try and get a deal. We're not. If that happens, great, I'll laugh. But we're not going to try and do that. We're just going to have fun.
Is that ultimately the essence of what you think it should be about? Is not... Like, when does that other stuff start getting in the way, do you think?
I think if you're poor, like a lot of musicians are, like I've been, like you, I think that changes a lot of the times. You know, you want it to be that's what it's about, that it's, you know, you're true to your form, to your medium and things like that, but you also need to make some money. And you also, like, sometimes they don't want to live on the floor or live on the couch or in a garage like I did. So you that changes sometimes. I guess that goes into the whole, you know, sell out terminology as well. Sure. And why Green Day can't go back to Gilman Street where
they
started.
But they did. They played there 2 weeks ago.
Did they do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Didn't know this.
Yes. Yeah, right. So I went online, checked out the set list from –
Was it all their first like couple hours?
Like Slappy Hours, nice. Sicker Plunk, all the way up.
Nice, that's great.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked to hear
that's
about
cool.
that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I guess once you get to, you know, Hall of Fame, they're gonna let you back.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's almost kind of punk rock to be like, fuck you, we're coming here anyway. Oh, all right.
Well, I think you kinda can in a way. You would a parking lot. You know?
Even like Billy Joe, like he had another band,
Pinhead Gunpowder,
yeah. And I saw them like, you know, like maybe like 8 years ago at a like a warehouse space in Long Beach,
right.
And there's Billy Joe like wheeling in his own amp out of a van that he drove down with the other guys from the Bay Area. So it's like, right. You know, I'm like, oh, there's this millionaire like wheeling in his own amp. For him, it's like, I don't think there's a big separation between like Green Day is this other thing, and that's the thing that kind of brings him money. But then he has this other band that like he puts out the records now.
Side project, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And so it's like it's. I don't think there's any real separation. It's like, you know, for him, it's just making music. And that band is like that. And the other band is like this. So I think you can do it. I think it's just like different art projects, you know, like right. It's the difference between like a painting and a video or acting.
I do think comfort is the enemy of punk, you know, like when you start getting comfortable in any way, it's like, well, you're not really fighting against anything anymore. And then
you can always find stuff to fight. Like, I mean, that's why they got political, because they didn't have to complain about, you know, not getting girls or not getting stoned. Or, you know,
right. That, which is usually, you know, I guess that would be the flag for a lot of pop punk, especially. Yeah. But you get political. I mean, I think, you know, some bands keep going like, I became, thanks to the Germs, friends with a lot of people that I, you know, grew up listening to. And the Adolescents are great. They were like one of the originals, and they're still going.
They're still going. They're
still
great.
Writing good stuff, you know, new stuff. And sometimes it's like, it's environment issues, you know, whatever you can kind of complain against or for. you can keep doing it. It's
Bad Religion still continues to be just, they sound the exact same.
Pennywise, the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Descendants are still, you know, talking about farting in vans.
Right. Guess you could do that.
Rage Against the Florence and the Machine. That's just a band project that I'm working on.
Oh, yeah, that cocked. Ready
just,
to go.
Yeah, I'm just going to write punk songs just about Florence.
I think that's a great name. Go. You're not going to be in trouble at all.
Okay.
I just need to figure out how to do punk music. I'm the least punk of anyone I know.
But that was the whole point, is because that means maybe you were punk.
I mean, no, I don't think so.
Who knows? But the essence of punk is that there isn't a thing that you're supposed to be able to do. That it became a thing. It became like a jacket and a piercing and tattoos and stuff like that. But Elvis Costello was considered punk, and Patti Smith was considered punk.
But I listened to I listened to the shamefully worst, most center of the, just right down the middle of the road pop music. There is one band that I still absolutely adore that I loved when I was growing up, and I still love Hall & Oates 100% unironically.
Oh, great.
I fucking love...
They were inducted last year into the Hall of Fame.
Well, were they really?
Yeah, the Hall & Oates of Fame, as it was called.
I'm actually surprised it took that long to get them in.
Questlove inducted them.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Philly.
That's okay. Sense. I wouldn't have thought of that, but yeah. Maneater. Good song. It's a good song.
It's just like, like white man funky bass lines. Like, I'm just in.
Well, the thing is I liked punk rock, but I like rock and roll in general. So it's in whether it's, you know, silly 80s or I love the hair bands. I do. I can't help it. The corny as hell, but some of the just classic choruses you could ever have. White Snake and Here I Go Again, you know, just things like that. It's like, first of all, I could never write that. That's kind of awesome. I'm sure if you were like a punk band and you kind of wrote that, I'd be like, that's kind of amazing. So, you know, there's a lot of other, you don't want to look at my iPod. There's a lot of embarrassing stuff in there too.
Well, that's good though. And I think it's good to, I mean, you know, there was this whole idea when I was growing up, because it's like, just because of the kind of nerdy cluster of friends that I have, a contingency of them were super punk rock.
Right.
Because they were fringy people and just not in the norm. And so I had friends who were like, you got to listen to the Dead Kennedys. You got to listen to me. And it was like, but I would constantly kind of get in this argument with them, because a lot of times they would reject anything that smack. And I'm like, that's the bad. You're just conforming to nonconformism. You can't say that we're all conformists and you're not a conformist. You're conforming to this other construct.
That's the other that's the shitty side of
it. That's the shitty side of it. Yeah. Because
totally. He's just like you. It's like, it's on the radio. Never mind. I hate it.
Yeah. You know? Like, listen to the song. Yeah, right. No. Yeah.
There's so much stuff I'm going back to now that I just didn't even pay attention to because it was on the radio or it was on MTV. Yeah. And it's shitty. But like, you know, you do get over it. And then you do have like a decade's worth of music, great music to go and check out. So it's new for the first time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That is a side effect. It's always a side effect of like not conforming. And at the same time, it's almost, it's incredibly hypocritical. But it's for me, I never was that way. You know, it's like I listen to that music, but I listen to I went to high school in the 90s. So the birth of grunge, you know, there was plenty of other stuff. I didn't like when I first heard it. I can't even believe it because I love them now, but I didn't even really like Metallica or Guns N' Roses because I thought it was a little harsh for a period of time. I'm like, phenomenal bands and I love them now, but there was like maybe sophomore year. I thought they were a little too rough. I'll take my Nirvana. I don't know what I was thinking, but, at the same time, you know, like, you know, couldn't stand the Candleboxes and Collective Souls and a lot of the bands that came through.
About that.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. Yeah, did I write about that? Sorry, guys. But then I love them now. No, but that was the transition. But you know, there are bands I like, the Gin Blossoms. I did.
Yeah,
yeah.
They were catchy as hell.
Very catchy.
And but they were, you know, lumped in pansy category. Can't be punk rock and like the Gin Blossoms.
No,
even though they were apparently fully. One of them was full of functioning drug addict, but like, you know, it's like you couldn't like them. They're pansy. Yeah.
I worked at MTV in the 90s, and our stage manager, who then went on to SNL, was married to the lead singer of the Gin Blossoms. Started dating when we were working together, and she was like, yeah, I'm totally in love with the guy from the Gin Blossoms.
You and every other girl marry. Now, where's my coffee?
No, really, but we're like really dating.
No, I get it. But
I know that's the image that Robin projects. You think you're all dating.
I got to be on set. I got 50 single women waiting down there.
Fuck off. All right.
I remember.
Anything on the Empire Records soundtrack, which was really the...
That was the movie. That
was the movie that really...
Wow.
Sugar High, big fan of that.
Sugar High from...
Sugar High.
You know the guy's name?
Coyote Shivers.
Coyote Shivers. Yeah. I met him recently.
There were a couple of those seminal
Rex Manning days right around the corner.
That really were basically like...
Soundtracks.
They might as well have just been like, KTEL presents.
Yeah. So singles.
Singles?
Yeah.
Reality Bites.
Reality Bites for sure.
Empire Records.
Empire Records. You know, Carly Wade had a good soundtrack. That's still in the 90s.
I don't remember the soundtrack from that one.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, well, I mean, it's like definitely. The movie's named after a Replacement song. So.
Right, that's true.
What other good soundtracks from the 90s? Wayne's World was a pretty good soundtrack.
Yeah.
It was a good soundtrack.
Yeah, it was. Crucial Taunt, man. They whale.
Crucial Taunt.
What was the Ballroom Blitz? That was like...
That was sweet.
Right. And I was always thinking of the Damned version.
On the Wayne's World soundtrack, did they use Crucial Taunt's version of Ballroom Blitz, or did they put Sweet's version of Ballroom Blitz?
No, it's Crucial Taunt's version.
It was Crucial
Taunt. It is! Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
And then that was a version that I knew. Because I didn't know anything else. I didn't know. I was like, well, that's a great song. And I learned the Sweet's version, the Damned's version, things like that. Damned, I'm like, oh, great. Okay. All right.
That's
thought it was
rad.
Tia Carrera just rocking.
Tia Carrera just, like, just
Red Hot
like,
Chili Peppers, Black Sabbath.
It's all in Wayne's World.
Ballroom Blitz, and they say it's by Tia Carrera. Jimi Hendrix, Foster.
Because I had the cassette tape,
of course,
and I think it said Tia Carrera.
Eric Clapton, Rhino Bucket, Alice Cooper,
Rhino Bucket,
Feed My Frankenstein,
That was a little different Alice Cooper. Yeah.
I'm hungry and I don't want pizza.
Bad. I'm just good looking.
Yeah. Can't hardly wait. Pizza. Ooh, maybe I was really wrong about this.
I feel like that was
Third Eye Blind, Smash Mouth.
That was like more pop.
That was that had Blink-182's Damn It on it. That was like their first pop off.
I didn't know that came off of that film.
Matt's favorite band, Third Eye Blind, knows the whole
Semi-Charm kind
of
life.
Feeder
was on there.
For some reason, yes.
Matthew Sweet.
I liked Matthew Sweet.
I loved Matthew Sweet. And Replacements. Yeah. And that was like the...
I never knew about the Replacements connection to that movie. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Until now.
Can't
Matt, do it. Matt, do it.
No. Little Third Eye Blind.
YouTube.
Just on the semi-charmed. That's it.
I'm good.
I'm semi-charmed.
We have video of you doing in the back seat of our car when we're on the road.
People can consult the video. It's there.
Whatever would you want to do?
No. It's coming over you.
Now that was a band.
Okay, now that's where you need to correct me. Because I didn't do it right. So you should do it the proper way.
That's fine.
So that
just do it wrong so you'll correct. Yes, exactly. That was a band I did not, I could not like. That's for sure.
You're not wrong.
I did not.
You're not wrong. I mean
that jumps into the other category
okay.
too.
That's okay.
I don't love them. I just knew that fucking single.
It's
so
an infectious
much.
Song.
Yeah,
for
the
sure.
Muffs were on the Clueless soundtrack. The Muffs, Luscious Jackson, Radiohead, Lightning Seeds, Smoking Popes, Beastie Boys, Boss Tones, of course.
Which
Supergrass
soundtrack is this? This is Clueless.
Clueless. Yeah,
Clueless had one. Yeah,
oh my God, Jill Sobule, pre I Kissed a Girl.
I remember.
Oh
yeah. And then Velocity Girl.
This this is fun way to date myself. I
MTV, you wish you could fucking date yourself so hard.
So hard.
Chris will never leave
in
Chris.
My house.
Baby, will you wear this mirror on your face while we make love? But I went to the MTV had a premiere party thing at the beach for Clueless, and Luscious Jackson played.
Oh, nice.
And I remember being there before Clueless was even really a thing. It had just come out. Yeah. I mean, it was just about to come out.
Right.
And Luscious Jackson played. And
I think they're in the third season of Pete and Pete. Yeah, they're in the third season of Pete and Pete. Yeah. They play the school dance.
I mean, fucking Iggy Pop was...
No, but I mean, they play the school dance as themselves.
Oh,
Luscious
nice.
Jackson.
As Luscious... Oh, wow.
Yeah, Ween was in the It's Pat movie.
It's Pat movie.
I don't know if I saw It's Pat movie.
Yeah. They play at the
end. You know, something fun to Netflix later on.
Yes, absolutely.
When you're in your hotel room.
When I'm in my alone.
Just double feature it with Stu's family.
When I'm alone, semi-dressed, watching a Pat's movie.
You got Wi-Fi included with that rate? Or,
yes, I did,
nice.
Thank God. Yes.
Did you tell them I'm going to be here for
slow.
A month? Or did you? Or you're like,
I did.
Let's see how it goes.
Oh, my God. No, you have to. Otherwise...
Yeah, they keep moving you.
Well, they keep moving you, but also I think it's even more expensive. I think that's like... They don't go on a daily rate if you're trying to do a month thing. They
that's good.
Oh, that's
they save
nice
you
the hotel,
some money.
People.
No, a daily rate in a 30-day. Holy man, I don't.
Yeah, that'd be $90,000.
That'll be like covered. Just cover
reasonable.
Just 90 mortgages. Nine mortgages at least. Yeah.
So season 3, Salem.
Yeah, please. 4, 5, 6, and 7. Yeah,
I think WGN's really like they really are doing some really interesting programming because they have that. They have the Atomic Bomb series
yeah,
as
Manhattan.
Well.
That's right.
Manhattan
yeah.
And then and I didn't realize that they were doing an Underground Railroad show too.
Yeah, it's new. I mean, they're I think about 4 episodes in in production on that called Underground. And that's also filming in Louisiana. In my hometown Baton Rouge, but then they have another one called The Outsiders, not about S.E. Hinton's novel.
Okay.
And I think that film's in Pittsburgh, and that just started with a couple of buddies of mine. I think it might have like a Sopranos type feel. And they're really putting some good cast together and getting some good shows. So far, if that's their 4, then we're clearly on another planet with Salem of being this supernatural type show,
but historical in a way.
In a way, yes.
There were
all playing
trials.
Real characters, yes. And what's fun about that first season too is some of the crazy stories that happened in the first season were things that were told back then. There were things that people believed in back then. People that went on trial, the Bridget Bishop character that I think we did in like, I think it was like the 3rd episode of the first season. That was a real character that was really happening to her. And now she was hung by human beings and not by witches, but you know, that's kind of how we did it. So it's fun to be able to play with the history with that, to try and be as realistic as possible and then just kind of screw with it.
Yeah. It is always interesting that it never really seemed to occur to any of the people who were burning or drowning these witches, like, oh, if they were actually witches, they would light everyone up with dark magic. Wow.
Absolutely. And I feel like that was a part of like what they used to, I think in history, that they would say if you would get yourself out of this predicament, if like chained up or whatever it might have been, if you really, you know, like, and like, why don't you use your powers to do this? And then finally it was too late and they drowned or right. burned or whatever the heck it was. And like, it's never a goddamn witch.
Yeah, I know. And no one in the town was like, God, we're no good at this. Yeah. We just keep burning and drowning the wrong
but
people.
But some people would say, oh, they, even though they're shackled up, they visited me. Their spirit came and visited me.
Right. Like, it's pure panic in what you can have in this modern world of just, of he said, she said, of, mm-hmm. Of just, I guess what could have happened in the beginning of time. But in this case, it's, I mean, like, if you imagine living in a town and then you, just someone didn't like you and then said you were, that's some gnarly shit. You know, that's some crazy stuff. That's and it worked. And obviously it came from power. So it's just in politics of them kind of running the town or running a country. That's what was running the town of Salem until the governor, I believe, of Boston, a governor of Massachusetts came to check on what the heck was going on. Yeah. Very kind of like what the kids were doing in Lord of the Flies, of just like just, and then all of a sudden the way that book ends and the movie ends of the captain suddenly like, what in the hell are you guys doing? You know,
what the fuck is going on up here?
You motherfuckers crazy?
Or even Children of the Corn. I always remember the scenes with like Linda Hamilton and Peter Horton when they're like, what are you doing to the kids?
Well, the blue man tried to do that, and you know what happened to him.
Well, yeah.
He who walks behind the rose got him.
That's right. But it's like one of those things where, you know, until that governor came, they just were running the asylum, inmates running the asylum.
Yeah.
God damn it.
And it was real. That's what's crazy, that wasn't fantasy.
That that there really wasn't – I mean, like, it's funny to have the idea of like, oh, well, you know, there's due process. We're having a trial.
Right.
Well, it's like, you know, we're having a trial to see if you're a communist. Are you a communist? I don't want to answer. You're a communist.
We're having a trial to see if this communist is a communist.
Yeah, exactly.
What was that, communist? No, I didn't even. That sounds like commie talk over there.
Free coffee and donuts.
That sounds like that possibly sounds like. But, you know,
you said there should be bagel Thursdays for the company. Free bagels for everybody?
Communists.
Let's have a trial.
It's not going to work here.
Yeah.
What do you do in your off time? Are you doing something? Are you working on something else at the moment? Or are you going to take some time? I would imagine. My guess is that your schedule's pretty fucked up when you're down there shooting because.
Yeah.
Are you like 6 days on, 1 day off?
This year was very easy, actually, for me. I can't complain. Janet Montgomery, our lead actress, she was put through the ringer this season. In the first season, all of the characters were in the town of Salem, and you were getting to know, if you're the viewer, you were getting to know the plot, the premise, the characters. The trials were happening and things like that. But at the very end of that first season, we kind of blow up the story and make it get larger than the actual town of Salem. So a character sent off to Boston.
Danvers.
We start to add the Native American tribes, the French and Indian wars we start to talk about. And poor Janet, Mary Sibley's character, was literally left alone in Salem almost by herself. So she had her scenes. She had to like talk to everyone. For me, I'm a recluse in season two. It takes me a while to come back and hunt her down and try and kill all these witches, because that was the whole point for John Alden, was he becomes this kind of almost supernatural witch hunter in a weird way to rid his town of witches. So I'm always hiding in season two. So I could work a day a week.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes 2 days a week. Get my butt kicked in those days, but then I couldn't complain about them because, as you know, if I was leaving the set and was just like, oh, my God, it was exhausting. And then I'd see, you know, the poor actresses who were just like dealing with so much work 5 days a week, 6 days a week. Sometimes I was like, all right, maybe I should stop.
It's not that bad.
I'm going to go back to my house.
I'll be at the Stray Cats. See you guys later.
I'll be at Stray Cats, yes. I'll be at, Raising Cane's. Eating my chicken fingers.
So you're done now. Do you know if you're going to go back, or are you just taking some time to relax?
I mean, I think it's all of the above. We are, you know, supposed to be, we just found out that we're doing another panel at Comic-Con. So we're excited about that. Which we're assuming means we're picked up for a season three. The ratings have been very good. And better this year. So we feel like it's a no-brainer. We've kind of been told without being told. They haven't made it official yet, but I don't know what that means.
WGN visited you in a dream.
Yes, and not just me. Yeah, but
you're
no, they
picked up.
They well, we had our creator Brandon Braga, who is one of the producers, creators of the show, he directed the final episode of season two and pretty much alluded to, you know, we're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. So we, if we know that, then it's still a long time off because it's cable, which is kind of one of the brilliances things of cable, of being 13 episodes.
Braga wrote Timescape, my favorite episode of Star Trek.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right, Mr. Trek. I was not a Star Trek guy.
Get in. So. Get in now.
It's get in now. Late. Is it not? It's not too late. Wouldn't that just destroy
it's still
my
out
life?
There. Yes.
On Netflix.
The amount of work
You're
I would have
hotel.
To do.
What are you going to do? That's, you're going
to
wait.
I got 30 days to get 30 days to do
on Star Trek.
On every single thing.
You know,
we're talking Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and all that kind of stuff.
I'm going to Trek it.
Are we talking Kirk? Are we talking?
I say jump in season three, Next Gen. You're good. Jump in there.
Wow, really?
Right in the middle.
Season three.
You'll figure out who's who.
Yeah.
Who's whom.
Who's whom,
Salem's one of a show that, because I moderate a lot of panels at Comic-Con, and, mm-hmm. and I'm in this sort of luxury position of like, I sort of get to pick and choose the ones that I want to do. And
yeah.
And so I had said, like, you know, these are the shows that I'm watching, and Salem was on that list. So if
awesome.
if they asked me to and I was available, I would love to moderate that panel.
Oh, that'd be a blast.
The show's really fun and
thank you, and fun
and fucked up in a fun way.
That's what we you know, it's one of the things that we try to to do per episode. It's not we're trying to tell a unique and interesting story and at the same time know what genre you are and so they've thought of some of the most the creepiest, weirdest torture devices, scare tactics, whatever, as the story, with, well, paying homages to a lot of films too. We had that box, the Malum, which I felt I had a scene, which is a lot of fun for me because I'm a big horror fan, of trying to open the box, and it felt very much like Hellraiser.
You
know, we had that Evil Dead moment where the kind of dead came back to life from the blood, and you know, to me, I was just like, this is awesome. Like, I love this stuff. Yeah, if we have that, then we're truly copying. Sorry. Yeah. And then we have even more of that in the second season. So it's something that we know we have to do, but once you do it well, you got to keep upping the ante, and that can be kind of difficult. So far, I feel like we've accomplished that in the first two seasons.
The thing that I really enjoy about the show is that it's kind of, and I mean this as a 100% compliment, like it's light fucked up fun in the sense that there are some episodes, like it's like you get through a Game of Thrones or, you know, or Walking Dead, and then afterwards you're just like, oh fuck, I just need like a minute. I need a minute to recover,
right?
Because I am emotionally disturbed, and there are fucked up things that happen in Salem, but it's fun. It's like really, it's more in the spirit of fun.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, and I don't know why or how that would work, but I have to agree. I mean, I'm a big fan of Game of Thrones and Walking Dead as well. And it's when I watch or when I've talked to people, one of the cool things that we have going on in Treeport is the background, the extras that we have on this show have to be the best extras of all time. It's incredible. They are citizens of our Salem. They are incredibly passionate, strange, lovable, wacky characters. That we have to keep using because it's a small town and obviously you're going to use the same background. And what they started to do is throw us Salem Sundays parties at the Stray Cat. And the entire background would take over the bar. Like there was like no local, like you had to be a part of Salem essentially to go into this bar on a Sunday to watch it. And it was a great bonding experience. And
that's
it was really cool. And I've never been a part of anything like that on a weekly, you know, kind of basis. And you could see their reactions. And their reactions is kind of like what you were saying. It was excitement, a little scared, but kind of excited for that scary thing to happen.
Right.
Or to even have a death happen or something like that. It's kind of strange. But when watching Walking Dead or Game of Thrones or something, it's a little, feels a bit more tragic, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's just emotionally scarring. And right. I need shows that are, I mean, I like a show that has fucked up things that happen, but still sort of like, oh, but it's kind of cool and it's fun and not
right.
like,
right.
And I also think it's rad that, and I think one of the beauties about working in a town like Shreveport or a small town is that, you know, I'm sure when you're working in Toronto, it's like, oh, everyone just scatters because it's a big city and you could go to New York or you could go, there's a million things to do, but you're really, it seems like you're forced to be a community, which is good.
Yes. I agree. I completely, I mean, and being in Toronto, you know, the first season of Nikita, you know, it's a big city, thankfully, because we're there for 9 months out of the year. It's a long time. But you have your sports teams, your restaurants, your music scene, all those things that you can do. And we got very close on Nikita and bonded together for that first season and that second season. But when you go into the third and you go into the fourth and suddenly you have your own friends and you're kind of doing your own thing and you have to like schedule a cast or crew dinner.
Right.
Yeah, I'll be free in a couple months. Whereas in Shreveport, you're like, I'm not doing anything besides working. I'm just, there's not, cause it's a smaller town. There's just not as much. And it does, breed a stronger sense of camaraderie and family. And that is actually a very good thing. And it's been, the town has just, you know, welcomed us and they've been phenomenal. Like they're already, it was this year being back for like, I guess, 48 hours. This year was sadder leaving because it was one of those things where like, oh God, we're still getting messages and like, well, are you going to come back to the local coffee shop, to that Stray Cat or to Rhino Coffee was like the coffee that we always went to. And you know, like your one breakfast spot and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, well, we'll see you in January. The town won't have changed. I'm sure you'll still be there.
Unless town, you know, like in Sonoy, which is like near where Walking Dead shoots, like the town that was the governor's town, has been slowly transforming over the years. It's like it's starting like Walking Dead paraphernalia. Like, come see all the, you know. So Shreveport, it could end up being like the new Salem.
Well, it's a similar thing because the town that we actually built to be Salem, which is really a real working set, it's incredible, is not in Shreveport proper. It's 40 minutes outside. So I don't know what will happen to that when the show ends eventually. They can't. I mean, it's like a town we literally built on someone's private land.
Real witches will move in. What do you
I mean? It's like Pioneer Town. It'll be like Pioneer Town out in like Palm Desert, where it's like it was like a living set that they built for just old Western movies. Mm-hmm. And then like the studios that built it stopped using it. And then people just moved in and started bars and like started living in this weird little old West town. So that's now it's like an awesome old West town. And they have like Pappy and Harriet's Western, like a bar.
That's right. I keep hearing about that.
Yeah, they've been having shows there.
Yeah.
And it's like just people moved in and took it over. And now it actually just it looks like an old West town that actually exists.
That would be a trip.
Yeah.
You could send a bunch of cosplayers to just live there as Salemites.
Yeah.
Well, we already have them, I think.
Yeah,
we really do. They're on set every day. You know, it is a trip. I mean, but also it's a very easy production in the sense of you got two locations. You know, all of our interior is on a soundstage, and then we go there 40 minutes away. So it's you know where you're going. It's never going to change because it's a period piece. So you're never going to suddenly be in downtown Shreveport shooting around the corner of a, you know, Chase Bank.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's just not going to happen. So,
third season flash forwards. It's happened before.
That's a flash forward.
That's a flash forward.
Just jump way.
Same character.
Brandon Braga knows his way around a time travel
That's
story.
That's very true.
Well, there you go.
That's
true. Yeah.
Just saying.
That's true.
Just saying.
Oh, man.
Or you could just have, it'd be really fun just like in the background.
You have Data and Geordi.
Yes.
At the tricorder.
Yes. Just in the background.
Walk past.
Yes. Don't reference it. You never talk about it.
I have to have him hear that. We got
oh,
that would be
do that.
Frickin' phenomenal. Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't you do that if you could do that?
God.
Especially on the last episode we just did.
Dorne would do it.
Dorne would do it. I think Spiner would do it. I think Will would probably do it.
That'd be so funny.
Oh my God, that'd be great.
Just an away team, just for a second.
Yeah. Well, garb, but have tricorders? Because that's what they would do. They would be in period garb.
Because they'd have to be in period garb to fit in.
Have tricorders to fit in.
No, don't you think? I feel like they just beam down, and then they realize that
they'd know what's happening.
In advance, they would know.
All right. Okay, that's fair.
That's awesome.
And then Picard would just go, you know, mid-17th century civilian clothing, and then head to the transporter room.
And Patrick Stewart would totally fit in.
Except the bald head would definitely make him stand out.
Well, he'd have a wig, you know. Like,
yeah, okay.
Have,
so we'd have
a period,
to, okay,
he'd have
okay,
a period
great.
Wig.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him in that wig.
And then he'd be able to, they'd be able to basically use Star Trek, they'd be able to use the Federation technology to create the illusion that witchcraft is real. They'd be able to,
nice.
To be able to beam in and out and levitate objects. And
maybe it's a different Salem planet, you know, they found their way to an alternate dimension. To set up a duck blind to observe.
Are you listening to this, Braga?
I know, I was going to say.
You need me to write it, I will.
I mean, we'll do always
one episode, just a bonus episode.
I thought it'd be really fun to take a show that for a bunch of seasons you think is one genre, and then all of a sudden you realize that that there's a larger shell that it just jumps genres, and it's a completely different.
Is there a lot of is there any history with that?
I don't think not really. I think
because I know there's a lot of surprise endings,
right?
Like, you know,
I think audiences would be furious. I think audiences would be really mad.
They're tough enough with I liked Lost, and I know that there was a lot of people that were not happy with the ending of Lost,
right?
You know that, which you never really knew what the heck was going on with that too. I still just like the potential Tyrannosaurus Rex possibility in the beginning, first episode or something, ripping through the plane. But like, you know, just there are a lot of possibilities that they do. Didn't Saint Elsewhere
snow globe
end with the snow globe? Yeah, I mean, that's some
Snow globe with the
audience
with the autistic child.
Yeah,
yeah.
And what was interesting about that is that you could tie a bunch of other television universes together and say that they were, because of the producers of that show and because of people who had guest starred, that all these other shows were actually just projections of this child's imagination.
And they're all just connected by Detective Munch.
That's right.
Wow. That, I mean, I think that's, well, it takes a lot of courage to do that, but.
And also a lot of like,
but you can do that. Yeah. Get Salem into the star. I mean, look, I mean, we got, yeah, I'm you got BB it. On it, so you can do that.
It could all just be taking place in that holographic cube that Picard had on his desk that he
My
put
God,
Moriarty,
what a
Moriarty
trip
in.
Trip that would be.
And I'll just, anyway, forget it.
Anyway, we don't want to spoil anything.
Well, you know, because, by the way, this is season three.
Yeah. I've been watching,
when they gel.
I watched the first few episodes of Wayward Pines, which is a pretty cool show.
Okay, I've not seen it yet. Yeah.
And they're starting to lay out. It's definitely like a weird. It has elements of Lost in the sense that there's this kind of larger thing going on.
Okay.
This larger, weird kind of intangible conspiracy thing going on. And you know what I was saying to my girlfriend was like, okay, you know, they're leading the writers are leading us down a path, and I hope that there is forethought that has gone into how this is going, at least some way how it's going to resolve, and not just, let's just throw a bunch of weird shit, we'll get people hooked in, and at the end we'll be like, I don't know.
Did you enjoy yourself?
You figure it out.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's where I got burned a couple times by American Horror Story. I'm like, oh, this is so intriguing. And then at the end, like, well, you know, you, it's your job to tell me what the fuck is going on. Right. No,
that's
point. I could just imagine stuff by myself.
If
without
you
me.
Know how the show ends, please write in.
Need to do it. Yeah, right.
Don't leave it all out there. You're
that
like,
is
fucking
true.
Wrap that shit up.
Well, I enjoyed the first season of Leftovers, so I'm hoping. Have you seen that one?
I haven't. I know the show, but I haven't seen it yet.
So I'm hoping that has ultimately.
No, they're never going to explain what happens to the people.
They're not?
Like, they said that from the get-go.
Did they really?
Yeah, in the book, it never explains.
Why didn't I know you before this? This is now that I quit immediately.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Well, it's like, really? They said, like, you know, because it was Damon Lindelof, so everyone was, like, very suspect.
Right.
And he's like, hey,
right
off the bat, I just got to let you know, it's never explained. Because the source material never explains it. So the show will never do it.
Well, let me just tell you, Star Trek wraps everything up real nice.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Sort of.
All good things?
No.
That's the best finale ever.
You know what else does?
We're still next generation.
Entourage wraps everything up.
No, it doesn't.
It sure does.
Braga Road.
Dream large, live larger.
Dream large, live larger.
I'll watch Wayward Pines if they recast Matt with Kevin Dillon.
There you go. Bring in the other Dillon. That's
bringing it around. Bringing it all the way around. Well done.
Oh my.
Well, we're like at an hour. Like we just burned through an hour.
Did we really?
Yeah, we did.
Nice.
Oh, you're so nice too. It was really nice. You know, because
I love this. This is fun.
I'm so glad because you probably. I guess now it's been probably a few weeks, but I know that you guys did an onslaught to PR, and we were trying to squeeze into your schedule like about a month ago.
Yeah, it was about a month ago. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
it just occurred to me, Data and Geordi would be the most noticeable people to throw in Salem.
We have to do this now. You know,
but you can't burn Data. You can't drown him either.
That's
so.
Right.
There's a wedge.
Oh, okay.
There's a wedge.
What could he?
Listen, I'm just saying.
No, I like
Braga. Do it.
Come on, Braga.
Well, what do you so?
Where's my phone?
What do you think their ultimate mission would be? Just to go down and
I think you just do it in the background and never explain their mission.
It's never explained.
Never explain their mission. I just think you just do it.
So that's just that'll be a very easy filming.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
One weird day.
Basically, they should come around a corner, look right to the camera, notice it, and then back away really quick.
It could even be a close up that they're not even tied into everything else.
Yeah. Just beam out. Right,
you don't
away.
Even see the beam. You just hear the faint beam out noise in the background.
Oh, that's amazing.
There wouldn't be a magical noise when they were beaming.
Was there an aura? Yeah, right.
Yeah, there was an aura. It would just their molecules would just
maybe that's disappear. Their internal screams from being disassembled,
being ripped apart, and then forcibly reassembled somewhere else.
Yeah. That was a good Galaxy Quest there.
Yeah. Oh, so
that was,
good!
I was just thinking that.
God damn it!
Yeah. That's phenomenal.
They're doing a Galaxy Quest TV show.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah, I read that.
Nice. Different cast.
I assume.
Well, one of them's in a wheelchair now. The black guy.
What?
Dougie Fresh. Right? Isn't that Dougie Fresh?
No.
Oh, it's what's his name?
It's
He was really funny, and he was like in a few movies in a row where
he was in
Ed.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. It's funny because it's like a friend of ours, Kamel, like he'll do this thing where he's always like, why haven't I seen that guy in something? And then he researches it, and it's never a good story. And then he lets everybody's like, remember the guy from the thing?
Oh, he loves being the messenger.
Yeah, he does it. Like, he's done it so many times.
Daryl Mitchell.
Daryl Mitchell,
yeah.
Oh, I wonder where that shoots. Probably Los Angeles.
It actually shoots in New Orleans.
Oh, good for them. Good for them.
Apparently.
Why do you think they came up with the idea of shooting a show that's based in New Orleans?
I always I would always see the CSI when I was downtown.
Here it is.
I would always see the CSI in New York people shooting downtown LA. I'm like,
paralyzed from the waist down in a motorcycle accident in November 2001.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's great that he's working.
Yeah.
Of course he's working. He's good.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the year after that accident, he was in Disney's The Country Bears. Oh, it was right prior to his accident. Well, wait. 2 years.
Yeah. What trivia are you looking for?
Yeah.
Is this Wikipedia?
This is the Google machine.
I would love an episode where Jonah just looks through someone's IMDb page and then makes up trivia.
Yeah. He was part of a hip-hop group from the 80s known as Groove Be Chill.
Is that true?
What a name.
What do you think?
Okay.
Seconds later, he did that.
I'm going to say it's not true.
Not true?
No, I'm going to say not true.
I'm going to say it's true.
I'm going to say it's true.
I'm going to say it's true because Jonah is not that racist.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, it is true.
Oh,
part of a hip-hop group from the 80s known as Groove Be Chill.
Can't name a band Groove Be Chill?
Pitch that in the room. IMDb trivia.
IMDb trivia?
For At Midnight.
Okay.
A game, an either-or game.
Yes.
You give a real and a fake piece of trivia from the IMDb site,
that's
they have to say
idea.
Which one's
there. There you go. That is a good idea.
Not right in there anymore, but I'll just throw it out anyway.
All right, no, listen. I'll pay you individually for that one joke.
Right now.
One joke. It's a whole thing.
Bucks. $40.
$220s.
Can I get a couple tens?
I just need a couple tens. You change for 20. Well, it's really good to see you, man. And I hope that I hope. Maybe I'll see you down at Comic-Con, and if they let me do that panel. But if not, then the next time that I come up,
that would be awesome.
Shane, it's Chris.
Well, no, I remember that for sure.
Well, yes. It's hard because especially at Comic-Con, you're seeing so many people at one time.
Absolutely.
And your brain gets a little scrambled, and then people are coming up to you that like, hey, and you just don't know. You don't know. So,
well, I'd always been a fan of your work, and also being like, I watch Singled Out a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Like House of a Thousand Corpses Left.
Nice.
But I'd always been well aware and big Walking Dead fan, so I watched Talking Dead and things like, you know, so for me to do this show was an absolute pleasure.
Man,
so,
it's good to see you. Yeah. And I hope you enjoy your month at the hotel.
I better. You know what? I better.
What?
Because I'm spending the money. I
better. Seriously.
Yeah, right? So yeah, me too.
There'd be fucking mint on that pillow.
There hasn't been one mint on that damn pillow. They don't do mints at this hotel.
Oh, man.
No.
Not even for a monther?
No, just baguettes.
For a monther.
A monther.
You join the monther's club.
You're a monther.
Hey, guys, I'm a monther. What are you, a dayer?
You're getting points for this.
A dayer?
Yeah.
You're going to get so many fucking hotels.com free nights.
Well, let's hope so. Someday down the line.
Just three, actually.
Just three?
10 nights.
Are there places online that people should seek you and say hi, or?
Nah.
All right.
You know, I do Twitter.
A little
Instagram,
bit of Twitter.
But I'm not really, you know, I don't know. I'd love to be more honest and upfront on social media, but I'd get in trouble.
Yeah,
so
no,
I kind of have to stay away. I'm thinking about starting some fake ones just to be able to do my own true beliefs about things.
Just fun. Oh yeah,
which is a lot of fun. Because it's always fun to do with friends. But yeah, it's can't
Jew beliefs.
No, that's not
Jew beliefs.
No, I don't think you want to call it a
why.
No, I just
That'd be
don't
a lot
think.
Of fun.
No,
these are my Jew beliefs.
No. Did you go to a Jubilee?
Oh.
That's a nice
Love
way to
Jubilee.
Matt's marrying a Jewish lady, so he's all going to become Jewish.
Way into
we're not
Jewish
really
ladies.
Sure what the reason for marrying a Jewish girl was. We think we think it might be to make jokes and be have everyone
be
okay with it.
Yeah,
we're
just using doing this as a safety net.
As soon as we have kids, I got Jewish kids.
Yeah. It's okay, my kids are Jewish.
That's right. It's a good fallback plan.
Yeah, thank you.
Should we end on a Groove Beach Hill song?
I see no other way to end this podcast other than ending that.
That or Candlebox.
This is a Groove Beach Hill.
Not even ironically.
You're like, no. It's a mix. I bet you it's good.
I'm already in.
You're like... '90s, did we say?
No, it could be 80s.
It's 80s.
Well, it's about that time for us to get on. So cut the rattle, yo, get set in your saddle. All right. Your horse,
I like this.
I'll mix it with Candlebox. Yeah, you. All of a sudden, left me far behind.
Well, the outfits are on point.
Hey, yo, I looked at B. Gavin. Yo, that's the beat.
And, yep, that's it.
It ain't nothing like it.
Thanks, Bobby Brown.
Oh, well,
yeah, thanks, Bobby Brown. Thank you, Hammer. Yeah, there's some Hammer pants on this.
Oh my god, Hammer pants and Hammer vests.
And Hammer shorts, apparently.
Could be Oak Tree.
Check out our groove so smooth that move your feet. Thank the man called Grand Chief and Commander of the Beat. As for the lyrics, they be kicking from beginning to end.
I have to get this thing on now. iTunes time. iTunes. Is that an app? Good.
Come here, Jesus app.
Casingle.
Just like that.
Get it now.
It just looks like you can only ever have one song on it at a time. It looks like cassette. Yeah. All right. Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.